Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I'm Father Dwight Longenecker. I'd like to invite you to join me for a pilgrimage tour to France this September. It's based on my book, St. Benedict and St. Therese, The Little Rule and the Little Way. I'll be teaching about the spiritualities and the lives of these two great saints, and we'll be visiting the great monastery of Fleury, where St. Benedict's relics are venerated, and of course going to Lisieux to visit the childhood home of St. Therese, the Carmel where she was a nun, and the great basilica dedicated to her honor. But there's more than that. At Paris, we'll be visiting the Basilica of Sacré-Cœur, Rue de Bac with the Miraculous Medal, going on to Vézelay, Nevers with St. Bernadette, Paray-le-Monial, where the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus was given to St. Margaret Mary, and then Chartres Cathedral, Mont-Saint-Michel, the Normandy beaches, and more. I think there's not only going to be time for instruction and learning, but also prayer and worship, celebrating Mass in the various locations, and also time for fellowship and a good bit of French food and wine, too. Come and join us this September. If you'd like to know more, go to CatholicHeritageTours.com. That's CatholicHeritageTours.com, or be in touch with me through my website, DwightLongenecker.com.
Fellowship and love.
We know Wednesday's a hard day. That's why we book really good shows for Wednesday. So we got a great one for you today. Second hour, we're going to talk about the Bible blueprint for the Marian dogmas. So if you love Mary, second hour's for you. If you're one of those people who not so sure about those Catholic Marian dogmas, and you'd like some biblical evidence of that, Carlo Broussard will be here second hour to give it to you. This hour, Jesus is a healer, and we Christians, I wonder sometimes if we're a little bit too sheepish about the fact that Jesus is a healer. Mm. We're happy to say Jesus saves, but we get a little quieter when we say Jesus heals, but he does indeed heal. And with so many people today in the world that there's probably not a person in the world today that doesn't know somebody or have someone in the family or is themselves struggling with addiction. The words that Jesus heals are important in that context as well, because he hasn't given up on anybody. And if you have questions in that regard, our topic this hour is healing and addiction. 888-318-7884 is the number. I can tell you the lines will fill up quickly. So if you'd like an answer from a Catholic perspective about healing from addiction, 888-318-7884. Scott Wieman is our guest. He is the founder of a nonprofit organization called Catholic in Recovery, which strives to bring hope to those who struggle finding freedom from the bondage of their addictions. The organization also helps people from all walks of life strengthen their personal relationship with Jesus Christ through the practical application of the principles of the 12 steps. Scott is also the author of The 12 Steps and the Sacraments. I think still to this day, the only book that makes the connection between the 12 steps and the sacraments. It was published in 2017 by Ave Maria Press. Scott Wieman, thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you, Si.
As the father of a new baby, are you going to be able to stay awake for the whole hour? Because I cannot have you nodding off.
I think I can do that, yeah.
All right.
Throw something at me if I don't.
Do you think I'm right about your book, The 12 Steps and the Sacraments? Like, this is it. This is the Catholic book that associates these two very important things, the ancient sacraments and the modern 12 steps.
I think there are other books that have overlapped the underpinnings of Catholic teaching and traditions, but perhaps not with the anecdotal way that my book does. There's many that I've found a lot of healing from myself, a lot of support from. Richard Rohr has a book called Breathing Underwater, which is great. This is an anecdotal book which shares a little bit about my story and the story of others who have overcome addiction, unhealthy attachments, a variety of them, through the 12 steps and through the sacramental life of the church.
So tell us just before we head to calls, if you tell us just a little bit about Catholic in Recovery. What is it? Where is it? Maybe I want to go there. So how do I do that?
Yeah. So Catholic in Recovery is a nonprofit organization, which you spoke of before, which provides healing for those struggling with addictions and unhealthy attachments, not just substance abuse, although we do get many people in with alcoholism, drug addiction, or have been in recovery for quite some time from those, as well as those in recovery from pornography and sex addiction, compulsive overeating, gambling addiction, the struggles of family members suffering with addiction themselves. as well as other people that just struggle with grief, depression, anxiety, grief, loss.
Okay.
People who are looking for the church to find healing, but also looking for a fellowship of men and women who have been through struggles.
Right.
You know, some who might have decades of recovery, and others who are in their first phases of the church. We found really two things. First, those who have been in recovery for quite some time. It's been an excellent bridge to welcome them back into the church, or perhaps into the church for the first time. And then also an outlet within the church for people who have been, you know, lifelong Catholics or have been faithful for a long time but struggling with an addiction that they've been dealing with and aren't really sure how to get themselves rooted.
Okay. 888-318-7884 is the number to call, 888-318-7884, if you have questions about healing from addiction. So how many of these groups do you have?
Yeah, we have about 25 Catholic in recovery groups around the country.
Okay.
Started here in San Diego, and we have groups throughout California and Sacramento and Murrieta, as well as throughout in Oregon, Portland, Oregon, Fallon, Nevada, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Harrison, Ohio, Abbeville, Louisiana, Minnesota, Michigan, Connecticut, New Hampshire, and starting new groups, you know. It's been about a 2.5-year journey, so new groups starting all the time.
Say there's somebody listening who says, you know what, I have availed myself of the 12 steps for one addiction or another. I'm Catholic. I've always wanted to help people in this way and apply the faith and the healing power of the sacraments. Maybe I want to start one of these groups. How can they do that?
Yeah, you go to CatholicInRecovery.com, where you'll find a variety of resources, blog articles, things that speak to the nature of addiction and the healing resources made available by the church. And we also have a place where you can submit a request to get a new group started. So there's a little meeting.
Oh, okay.
Yep, a meeting menu option available. So you can either start a meeting, click there to start a meeting, or you'll also find our meeting directory there, which will have a map of the United States. You can find a local Catholic in recovery group if there is one near to you, or if there's not, we'd be happy to help you get started.
And the book, of course, is The 12 Steps and the Sacraments, A Catholic Journey Through Recovery by Scott Wieman, who is the founder of Catholic in Recovery. You can get it from Ave Maria Press. And while Scott's on the air and with us here today, Ave Maria Press said, well, let's give him a special deal on it. So if you go to Ave Maria, you go to AveMariaPress.com and you find the book, The 12 Steps and the Sacraments, what's the deal? How do you get it?
Yep. So use promo code 12 Steps, all spelled out. And that gives you 20% off plus free shipping.
Okay. Okay. Say the promo code again.
12 steps.
Oh, that's okay. I guess that wasn't so hard for me to remember. Okay. Again, our guest is Scott Wieman. We take this time to talk about addiction and recovery from a Catholic perspective. We welcome your call. 888-318-7884. Let me get a little controversy in before I go to the calls. I don't feel that as a society we're doing a very good job in this area. And I feel that way in part because there just seem to be so many people just that you see out in the world who are clearly in anguish and nobody's there apparently to help them. And I suppose there's a connection between mental illness and recovery to some degree. I don't know what that is. You'd have to tell me. But so tell me, are we doing anything right as a society in this regard, or what can we do better?
Yeah, good point. Okay. I think that we've made improvement. I believe that we've made improvement in normalizing the process of recovery in certain areas.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that kind of takes two steps forward, one step back here and there.
Right.
But as a society, yeah, there's a lot of room for improvement in terms of treating those both with substance use, those with mental illness. It's about, you know, the statistics that I've seen say about 50% of people with a mental illness use are addicted to substances,
right.
And about 50% of people who suffer from substance use addiction also suffer from mental illness.
So that's a pretty high coordination. I mean, it's not total. I mean, it's not a perfect a confluence, but that's a lot of people sharing those.
No doubt.
Right.
And it's challenging to determine what's the, you know, it's the chicken or the egg there. Are people suffering from a mental illness and therefore using substances or other behaviors in order to self-medicate?
Or is one causing the other?
Exactly.
The use causing the other? Yeah, well, would it be fair to say that the Catholic approach to healing from addiction is holistic in that it wants to, I mean, medicine, therapy, faith, sacraments, all community, all of it is part of the healing.
Yeah, It is. And I think that in the, you know, in the perfect world, in a utopian sense of the word Catholic, that yes, that there is a holistic approach there. I think that in many ways our leaders or, within a parish or in a community are overwhelmed with tasks and work.
Right.
That it falls off the table, and perhaps we delegate a lot of that healing to other secular groups or other you know, there's a lot of opportunity for healing within the church, but that requires accompaniment, that requires fellowship with others. And if that's not there, you know, we will often delegate that to either local government or non-governmental agencies.
All right, we're getting a bunch of calls in, and so I want to get to them. 888-318-7884 is the number. There are lines open if you have a question in this regard. Healing and addiction is our topic today, 888-318-7884. We'll take a quick break. Be right back to take your calls for Scott Wieman right after this.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
I've got a few things here and there that I've learned along the way. I'm always studying history, and I love studying history. So I try to bring in some of the historical perspective, especially at a time in our history when people don't know much history anymore.
Open Line with Father Mitch Pacwa, tonight, 10 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Francis reminds us that it does not take a specialized degree in theology to become a great evangelist. We're all called to evangelize. Think about the woman at the well. After she encountered Jesus, she immediately went into the city and invited others to meet him as she had. You and I can go out now and do the same. And St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. Get involved today by contacting us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Catholic Answers Live. Hey, I want to invite you. It's getting close to the last time. It's probably not the last time. I'll probably invite you again. But we're going on this pilgrimage November 4th through 13th of this year. And there's a few spots left. Whether you are single or a couple, we said we were only taking 20 couples. But we can the singles have been a little lower, so we can bump it up a little bit. But we cannot change the total number of people that go. We can only take 50 people with us. Our chaplain, Father Hugh Barber, I would pay just to go to Rome with him. An extraordinary man, knows Rome inside and out, and he's going to be preaching and celebrating the sacraments with us, including confession during this pilgrimage to Rome. What's special about this, in addition to Father Hugh Barber going with us, is we're just going to stay in Rome. We're going to go downtown. We're going to stay at the Hotel Colonna Palace. You can look it up. It's right in the middle of everything. You're going to wake up every morning in the heart of Rome. We're not going to be on and off buses constantly or packing up and moving. And we are really going to live Roma. We are going to eat Roma. We're going to drink. We're going to smell it. We're going to see Rome from the Middle Ages and Rome from the ancient times and the Rome of St. Philip Neri and all the other saints. You're not going to want to miss it. It's November 4th through 13th. Our president, Chris Cech, is going. I'm going. Father Hugh Barber is going. And the way you get to go, take one of those last spots that's left, is you go to CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com. Go over to CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com, and we will see you in Rome. Our guest is Scott Wieman. Scott Wieman's book is The 12 Steps and the Sacraments, A Catholic Journey Through Recovery. He is the founder of Catholic in Recovery, and we have calls for you. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. If you have a call and you'd like to talk with Scott about recovery and addiction and the Catholic faith, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. Mary in Detroit, Michigan is first up today. Mary, you with us?
I certainly am.
All right. Your question for Scott.
Well, actually, it's another one occurred to me, too, so I'll put them both out there, and whichever he'd like to tackle.
All right.
I'd like to know his observation of or experience with the role of fear. And I'm not talking about a specific fear, but a generalized anxiety in the development and maintenance of substance problems. I think if he's able to, I'd like to know his thoughts on that from a developmental perspective. If the fear started when someone was young versus, later in adolescence. The other question is, I'd like to know his thoughts on the disease model.
Okay. Let's do both of them.
Yeah.
These are great questions. So let's start with the role of fear and in addiction.
Yeah. So fear, it's a great question. Thanks, Mary, for your call. I think that fear is an underpinning of really, anyone that's either suffers from addiction or not. But a lot of, fear comes and can start at an early age and is really a adaptation. We build these adaptations in our life based on fears that we have. We're always, looking to maintain safety and looking for secure attachments. And by doing so, when that's not available, or if we find, we're fearful of loss or fearful of scarcity or something along those lines, we often make adaptations to find security in our life. And when that's not the case, or when that's not there, we begin to panic in some ways. I can recognize, in my own development, both before sobriety and in sobriety, that fear has been a really big issue that's been tackled. It's, throughout the working of the 12 steps, and step four in particular, we take a really deep, in-depth look at fear and how, what types of self-serving models of behavior that we've used to combat fear and how that's had a negative impact in our life. In many ways, the adaptations that we make may have served us previously in life when we were younger, but we still kind of adapt or use those behavioral adaptations later in life, and based on fears that have been deeply ingrained within us. And so much of relying on substances or looking to compulsive overeating or gambling or whatever that might be is often just a reaction to a fear that we're living with.
Okay.
My experience, when I first got sober, it was one of two ways. My mind was ping-ponging between, regret and shame of the past,
okay,
and fear of the future, fear of what lied ahead of me. And without even, like Mary had mentioned as she called, there may not have been a specific fear or phobia there, but just this general fear that I'm not good enough, or I might be found out, or what if the solution doesn't apply to me? All these different things. What are people thinking of me? Those are very basic fears that can really embed themselves pretty deeply inside of us.
Okay, and so then Mary asked about the disease model. Could you just first say what that is, and then your take as a Catholic, who knows all about this stuff, about the disease model?
So the disease model is referring to a particular way to view substance use and addiction, and it really says that addiction or reliance upon substances is a disease, and so we can classify it just like we would classify anything else in a we can diagnose depression or anxiety or bipolar disorder or things like this. And some of those things may be curable where we don't have those at all. But the disease model says basically that in some ways, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic, and that it's a disease that we have and live with. We can, combat it and put it in remission for some time, but it's not something that we can necessarily entirely heal from, that we're always in recovery. And that, lends itself to means that we always need to take our daily medication. And, that's going to look differently for people. But, in many ways, daily medication might be prayer and meditation. It might be reliance on fellowship. It might be reliance on a sponsor or a mentor or someone that's close to us, communion, the sacraments, a variety of different ways that we can take that daily medication for the disease.
Mary, those answers helpful to you?
Yeah, good job.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you very, very much, Mary. I suppose there's a common critique of the disease model is that it fails to maybe account for character or the moral dimensions of this. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely necessary to take a look at, and not just, identify ourselves by the disease. We would,
right,
especially particularly those that treat mental health or that treat mental illness wouldn't say that someone is schizophrenic but has schizophrenia. There's a significant difference there, and that, that's a disease that I have, but that's not a disease that I am.
I see.
And I think it's also important.
And so I still have all my responsibilities as a human being of being moral and being intelligent and all that.
No doubt.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's also important to understand that the presence of an addiction or a compulsion or a unhealthy attachment in one's life is not a moral referendum on one's character. And so that can be, I think it's really important that as we are dealing with anyone who might be less than perfect, all of us, that we keep that in mind, that that's, you know, an adaptation, that that the presence of an addiction is not a moral referendum on one's life. And in fact, when used to propel us to greater relationship with God or our higher power or our fellow brother and sister in Christ, that that can actually be a great asset to us.
Wow. Okay. Mary, thank you very, very much for getting us started. Let us go now to Sue Ann in Dallas, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Sue Ann, are you there with us?
Yes, I am.
Your question for Scott.
I was wondering if Catholics in recovery could be an overarching umbrella for the establishment of other ministries within the church.
Yeah, can you give
for
an example?
Instance, a women's program. I've noticed that within my church, there's lots of stuff for men, but there's not very much ministry for women. And I think the idea of small Christian communities is a great idea, but you know, how do we get something like Catholics in Recovery started within our parish? We have a absentee pastor, more or less.
Yeah, well, there's lots of parishes that are working with half a pastor or a third of a pastor these days because the pastors are so spread thin. So just help us out.
Yeah.
How can we get something like this going in our parish?
Yeah. So, if this is something that you're interested in, I highly suggest going to CatholicInRecovery.com, and under the meetings tab, there will be an opportunity to click, start a meeting, and then you can fill out a form, for an inquiry into starting a new group or starting a meeting at your parish. And from there, we'll connect with you and we'll talk with you about the steps in which we take to get a new group started. You know, we provide in many different ways as far as just getting the meeting off the ground, how to develop a core team of individuals who might be a great presence as the meeting begins, as well as how to promote it locally, use local resources, and also, you know, give you some experience into what a Catholic in Recovery meeting looks like using some virtual and online meetings and platforms that we use. You did mention, I think, the small group being a really great option as far as people being able to connect within the parish and perhaps a lack of opportunity for women to do so. We do specialize groups and can have, you know, general recovery groups and general recovery meetings available for both men and women with a variety of addiction types, but also can create and have resources available for women's only groups or men's only groups related to specific issues or just general recovery as it is. You know, many people will attend our groups and not necessarily have or identify with a particular addiction that they're struggling with, but they're just in a place where they feel lost or they're struggling with some grief or some depression or anxiety, and the presence of other people who are humbly sharing about what's really going on in their life in a very honest and open way can be life-changing and really provide an outlet where one doesn't need to have the, you know, the perfect theology in order to feel a part of, and can really just, you know, kind of start by sharing some of their weaknesses or some of their desires for growth and improvement and fit right in.
Sue Ann, thank you very, very much. I hope that that was indeed helpful to you. Scott Wieman is our guest. His book is The 12 Steps and the Sacraments, A Catholic Journey Through Recovery. If you have a question about recovering from addiction and the role that the sacraments might play in that, the role that the Catholic faith might play in that, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We go now to Donald in New Jersey, listening on what I believe is Domestic Church Radio. Donald, do we have you with us?
Oh, yes, yes.
And your question for
Thank
Scott.
Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to, Donald.
Yes. I was wondering, you know, I have this fear. I have a bit of money, and I have a general fear of losing it, and it's sort of an addictive thought. I suffer from a mood disorder problem and depression, and I get nervous about my finances, and sometimes I wish I didn't have a bit of money, and I feel more at ease, and I know Jesus was rather poor at his birth in the manger, and you know, I get anxiety over that.
Are you stuck on anxiety, Donald?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough, Scott.
Yeah, I'd say that I don't want to call anything normal or not normal, but that seems to be, you know, patterns. It's, you know, anticipating scarcity and controlling or keeping things to ourselves and as a response is something that I think many people deal with. You know, that can also be something that can be very tragic and can also, you know, really limit one's freedom to live as a faithful Christian or just to live on a day-to-day basis. You know, when you're often concerned about scarcity or really fear is overwhelming you, we make decisions that are often not rooted in the love that Jesus Christ has for us. It's often rooted in fear rather than freedom. You know, working through the 12 steps of recovery is really a great way to first understand that I am powerless over whatever it might be, you know, my thoughts or my fears about money, and then coming to believe that a power greater than myself, who we'll call Jesus Christ, can restore me to some kind of sanity, and then turning our will and lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. And that, you know, a very helpful and important way to surrender those fears and anxieties over to God. And that's, you know, much easier. I can speak into a microphone and say that, but that's much easier said than done. There's, I think, being able to find fellowship of men and women who have been through similar experiences and can provide tools and skills and encouragement along the way is critical.
Are you familiar with Gary Zimak, the Catholic author who writes about worry?
No.
He has suffered from anxiety himself, and I'll recommend a book to you, Donald, in that line, because we're big fans of Gary Zimak around here, and he has a wonderful book called "Stop Worrying and Start Living," and it's rooted in discovering a faith in the Christ of the Bible that allows for a kind of freedom from worry. And Gary has lived it and studied it, and I think you'll enjoy the book. So maybe look for Stop Worrying and Start Living by our friend Gary Zimak. Was this helpful to you, Donald?
Very helpful. I think, you know, I have to, a problem with people my age, I'm 59, and my age, when they have financial worries, they get lonely. It causes loneliness. And sometimes I feel very alone. I'm not married. I've never been married.
Yeah.
And I have a few friends, but I've lost track of my good friends that I went to college with. I don't know where to find them.
You know,
I am lonely.
Donald, I hate to say it this way, but this is the truth. You're not alone in feeling alone. Our society is creating an absolute epidemic of loneliness. And it is not something to be ashamed of. Often those contexts are just not there. We'll talk more about it when we come back.
Every question is important. Ask yours today on Catholic Answers Live.
Jesus asked his disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" Turns out that today, as back then, this question has a lot of different answers. So many groups want to appropriate Jesus, tweaking his identity until he looks and sounds just like one of them. But then you no longer have the Lord, says apologist Trent Horn. You have an imposter. In his new groundbreaking book, Counterfeit Christ, Trent exposes 18 phony versions of Jesus that we encounter today, helping you to recognize the fakes when you see them, explain why they're phony, and make a case for the full truth and beauty of who Jesus is, the Christ, the Son of the living God. Order your copy of Counterfeit Christ today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Love and beauty. As a little girl, Dawn Eden Goldstein knew that she wanted those things, that in them somehow she would find God. Over the years as a rock journalist, she moved among some of popular music's best-known artists, straining to capture that transcendent love and beauty in every note and lyric. In Sunday Will Never Be the Same, Dawn recounts her spiritual journey in beautifully wrought detail, mixing powerful accounts of trauma, healing, and epiphany with funny anecdotes from inside the music scene. It is the rare conversion story that delights as it inspires, amuses as it edifies, and ultimately lays before the reader a lived testimony to the transforming grace of Christ. Order your copy of Sunday Will Never Be the Same by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Tomorrow on More to Life, Family Drama.
All the conflict in your family getting you down? We'll share tips to help you have a more peaceful and joyful family life.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Our guest is Scott Wieman, the author of The 12 Steps and the Sacraments, A Catholic Journey Through Recovery. He is the founder of Catholic in Recovery, which you can find at catholicinrecovery.com.
That's right.
Okay, I wasn't sure about what. I never know exactly what comes after anybody's dot anymore. You know, there's so many things that come after the dot. If you have questions about any kind of addiction and recovery, healing, especially if as it's connected to what the Catholic Church offers in the sacraments or in other ways, you are welcome to call. There are lots of folks on the line. One line is open, 888-318-7884. We go now to Dave in Cincinnati, Ohio, one of my top 10 favorite Ohio cities. Dave, your question for Scott Wieman.
Well, thank you for my call. This is the first time I called. I'm a little bit nervous about this. My wife and I, our 23-year-old son moved home from college a year ago. Make a long story short, when he came, he did not finish his schoolwork, moved back home. And over the past year, we've come to learn that, you know, there are some mental health issues there. But recently, we've found a number of things hidden in his room that clearly there's a drinking problem going on here. It's not a surprise. It's actually a bit of a revelation. And by the way, I've been happy 12-step recovery person myself for the past 12 years. So I know a bit about the 12 steps and also how my Catholic faith has helped me. My question is how, and by the way, this has also been very difficult in our marriage. So I believe my wife is listening to this right now. We love each other dearly, but it's been difficult. I guess the question is, you know, as a parent, can you offer any advice? And let me say that some of the options could be, we could turn a blind eye to it, knowing it's going on in our house. Or on the other extreme is, we could show him the door and say, if this is the choice, where you live your life, you can do so elsewhere, which would basically render him, I think, homeless. But I think maybe there's, through the grace of God and through surrendering to God's will, I'm trying to find the place, perhaps in between, where we don't take punitive measures, but we cannot and will not provide a safe place for him to exercise or act out on his addictions. But I'm just kind of, there's more to it than that, but I just wanted to get your thoughts and opinions on how a parent can deal with that.
Okay, Scott. Yeah.
Thanks for calling, Dave. And know that that's not an easy thing. You, your wife, your family are in our prayers, and you know, it sounds like where I was at when I was 23 years old. It wasn't, I was had just come back from college not long ago without completing, living with my parents and also struggling with some mental illness, and finding that there was, you know, hard to find a way out. It's a very hard and difficult situation, and I think that honoring that challenge that you're in, that you and your wife are in, is an important thing, and that it's not something that you caused. Unfortunately, it's also not something that you can necessarily cure. But you can love as a father and as a mother and as a husband and a wife, you can love each other. You know, I think that there is, you mentioned two extremes. Either do we continue to just let it keep going and turn a blind eye to it, or do we kick him out and just, you know, hard love, tough love, get it together. When you do, you can come back. You know, I think that there is plenty of room in the middle between those two. Oftentimes we strive under expectations and knowing what's expected of us. And so, you know, as a family, this probably means changing some of the dynamics within the family, creating or maintaining strong limits. You know, these are the limits that we're holding here, boundaries that we're holding here. It doesn't mean that there's limits on our love for you. What it actually means is that we love you enough to kind of hold these boundaries with you, which might include having no alcohol in the house, or, you know, no using the, you know, family car if you're going to be driving. We're not going to be solving your consequences for you. You're going to have to face the natural consequences that come with your behavior. All those things, you know, I know that when you pair up, you and your wife or the loved ones that are around you, teaming together to making these decisions, it means that everyone has to be on the same page. And that can be a challenge. And, you know, because there can be such a hard thing to see a loved one, like a son or a daughter, go through addiction and you know, see their life in that manner. it can be challenging. It can bring up a lot of emotions. And so doing so with the understanding that we're in a really challenging position here, but we're going to do the hard thing. We love our son enough to do the hard thing in this instance, and that might be changing some behavioral patterns within the family. That might mean that we're going to hold these boundaries with you. And if you don't, these are what you can expect as far as, you know, what's going to happen. It's a big question, but I'm glad you're calling in and taking a look at it.
Okay, Dave?
Okay. Thank you very much.
And congratulations on 12 years.
God bless you.
You know, in recovery yourself. And I think the best thing that we can do is really tend to ourselves and find healing on a day-to-day basis for ourselves. And that means managing our own relationships. And
you know, I have to say, listening to Dave, there's a certain dynamic of you know, if you have a child with a physical ailment, say a heart defect or something, a community rallies around you. People bring you casseroles, you know, when there's surgery and all that. But if you have a kid with mental illness or addiction, that can be very isolating. The opposite of what should happen really happens, and it can be so hard on a marriage. So I really feel for Dave. I feel like that's something we could do better as a Catholic community, as Catholic people. Is, you know, your kid has this problem. You're not a bad parent. The marriage is not a failure or anything. You probably need a casserole right now. Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. Okay, Dave.
Yeah, can I just ask one more thing?
Sure.
You know, what worked for me is I was given an ultimatum. You're going to take care of this or I won't go into the details, or else. And that scared me enough to get me into a 12-step meeting, and that's where I've been ever since. There's a part of me that thinks that the sooner he finds his rock bottom, the better. But again,
is that
true? The one extreme is extreme, and I don't know if I've got the heart for that. Even if I thought it was the best thing in the world and it was for his own good, I just don't, in my heart, feel that's the right thing to do.
It's a hard thing to do. It's a very challenging thing to do, and sometimes it takes, you know, doing the hard thing is often what love asks. Yeah. Jesus is the ultimate example of that. But, you know, I think that setting limits, important, having expectations, and perhaps, you know, that means, taking a look at yourself and how are you keeping him from experiencing the natural consequences that come with this kind of behavior.
So as you said, a lot of steps between the two extremes. Mm-hmm. There's still those to try out, at least.
Yeah.
Let's get started.
But,
yeah. Okay. Thanks, Dave. I hope that was helpful to you. Thank you very much for the call. Scott Wieman is our guest. His book is The 12 Steps and the Sacraments. We are talking about addiction and healing today on Catholic Answers Live. And Veronica is next. Veronica is listening on The Great Spirit Catholic Radio in Omaha, Nebraska. Do you know why I call it The Great Spirit Catholic Radio? Because I've been there. That's how I've been there. Veronica, your question for Scott.
Yes, good evening. I'm listening, and as I do every evening and morning, the gentleman that just got off, pretty much same position I am. I have an adult son that has been struggling with alcohol. He's been through everything you can imagine, even the legal system. I, as a mom, my firstborn, and a Catholic, and he was raised Catholic, I keep God first. I pray daily. I go to Mass. I, you know, do the rosary for him, but I'm not getting through to him, and it hurts so much. I've even told him, you know, you're going to have to get out. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. I'm cutting you off. I asked him this morning to go to Mass, and he said, yeah, sure. But there's like, I'm not reaching him.
Okay. Scott, how do you answer that?
Thanks for calling, Veronica. You're in a hard place, and you're not alone. I wonder what you're doing to care for yourself. You know, I think that oftentimes we get into the process of seeking to heal other people or to take on the battles of other people, which comes out of love and is something that we can do. We can certainly stand by someone, but we can't do some of the hard internal work for them. And, you know, oftentimes when attempting to do so, we neglect the things that we're doing for ourselves. So it sounds like you're, you know, tending to your spiritual life, attending daily Mass, praying the rosary, and really continuing to foster a relationship with Jesus, crucial. But I wonder what your life would look like if this wasn't a part of your life, and how you can do some of those things. You know, if your son was healthy, what would your life look like? And, you know, can maybe spend some time conceptualizing that. And then how can I incorporate some of those things that my life would look like into my life now? You know, assuming and understanding that, yes, this is a part of my family right now. And I can also go about taking care of myself, maintaining my own health, doing the things that I like to do. You know, I know that it's a challenge, and we, you know, as family members, as loved ones of someone with an addiction, we often just jump in the pit with them rather than sending a rope. Or, you know, unfortunately, or fortunately, you know, it may not be you, but it may be the healing touch or the care of another person that helps him along the way. That is in God's timing and in God's plan. But in the moment, I recognize you are not alone in this. I think that, you know, that's clear by the calls that we've had and callers that we've had. But certainly locally, you can probably find some resources of individuals who have been through a similar situation, are going through a similar situation, and connecting with them. Because as it's been alluded to before, when we isolate in this, and, you know, we then that's when fear, that's when the space between our ears can really get the best of us, and thinking that I'm all alone, I need to do this myself, I just need to dig in a little bit deeper and a little bit further. And or, you know, maybe I'm the problem. All these different things can come in isolation. When we extend ourselves, find fellowship, and unite with others who are in a similar place, that can provide answers and healing, and perhaps even just a "it's going to be okay" touch.
Yeah, right.
That can do wonders.
Okay, Veronica, your response.
I totally agree, and I have isolated myself. I basically go to Mass. I have a 18-year-old that just graduated from high school that I have neglected her because of my son's issues. So, and I have been through all of those, you know, I'm the problem, it's my fault, he's this way, the denial. And I recently, because he's in group therapy, he goes to meetings, and one of his therapists told me to get involved myself with groups and do something. But I just, the way I was raised, the Catholic that I was raised, is you don't let everybody know your problems.
Ah.
And I just can't figure how to change this.
So you're Irish. No, just kidding. Yeah, any words of wisdom for Veronica on that?
Yeah, I feel you, Veronica. I think that's a cultural, a cultural tradition that we've held. I think that too often within the church, you know, we show up looking good, don't let anyone else know what's really going on below the surface. You know, we use our holy language, but it's hard to let someone else into that. I mean, you're a national Catholic radio station and sharing about it. And I'm sure that even just the relief that comes with talking about it can be very therapeutic yourself. But I would agree with the advice that you're getting, is be a part of it. You know, you don't have to take ownership of the problem, but also recognize that you can find healing yourself.
Veronica, thank you very, very much for the call. I hope that it was helpful. We're talking with Scott Wieman, the author of The 12 Steps and the Sacraments, and he's the founder of Catholic in Recovery. More with Scott and your calls right after this.
Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is proudly supported by CatholicChemistry.com, a new dating site for Catholics who want to do dating right and believe relationships start with Catholic chemistry. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicChemistry.com for their generous support on the web at CatholicChemistry.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Isn't it awesome that we today do not recognize His presence in the Eucharist? Is it because we really don't go to Him in humbleness of heart and say, "Lord, I don't believe, help my unbelief"? Lord, I want to see you. I want to recognize you. I cannot live without you. Are we saying that?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Catholic Answers Live. We're talking addiction and healing. As we said at the beginning, Jesus is a healer, and those sacraments, those aren't just something to be kept on the shelf or kept at arm's length. They have great power in them. You found the power of the sacraments in your own life, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
And but when is that still going on? Like, you still feel like you need them, or are you over that?
I need the sacraments more today than I ever have.
Well, you got to tell my adult daughter.
I promise you that. Yeah. You know, it's a funny thing. When I first got sober, you know, I had lost everything.
Yeah.
I didn't have really much else. Now that, you know, there's more stuff in my life, I have a beautiful, wonderful wife that I met through the church. I have a young 10-month-old baby. You know,
Where'd you meet the baby?
And a variety of other things, you know, being able to participate in a ministry that's growing and thriving is
right.
I feel, you know, when I had nothing to lose, when I've already lost everything, I could just freely rely on God and Jesus. And now there's temptation to pull, you know, to rely more on Scott than there is on God at many times. And, you know, God, I got this part of it. I'll refer to you when I need you. But you know, being able to, you know, hear the stories of other people and just continue to participate in recovery programs and, you know, on a daily basis, maintain a relationship with the sacraments, maintain a relationship with Jesus through prayer, and, you know, meet people where they're at has been very helpful too.
Yeah.
I've done it very imperfectly, but yeah.
Well, that's not the only way to do it. I mean, unless you're the Blessed Mother or Jesus, doing it very imperfectly is the only way.
No doubt.
Chris in Boston, Massachusetts, listening on 1060 AM. You are up next. Your question for Scott Wieman. We got you there with us, Chris?
Yeah, hello?
Oh, hi. Heather, you have a question for Scott Wieman? You're on the air.
Oh, awesome. Yep. So I'm a father now, and my son finally came back from college, and, you know, a lot of things have changed. Actually, I got to step out of the car because the AC is a little loud, but a lot of things have changed since he came home, and I found, like, a couple of things in his room stemming from narcotics to nicotine to alcohol, and, like, I've tried to have a talk with him to the point where he's skipping mass with us now, and now it's becoming more of a problem because now that I see it, like, I can imagine, like, God forbid what he's doing at school, and I can't imagine. I try to talk with him about it, and he gets really defensive about it, and he's trying to tell me it's not a problem, and he just does it, like, socially. But I'm like, those are things you don't do socially. So, like, there's 100 ways you can be social with people, you know, and it doesn't have to stem from those kind of drugs and, like, addiction. Like, I'm not, as a father, I'm not really sure how do I, like, maybe even have the conversation with him to, you know, further help him, not even talking about getting him help at, like, a rehab place or something, like, just for me to, like, have a conversation with him. I'm not really sure how to even start something like that.
Oh, that is a great question.
It's a great question. So I'm imagining that you're going into many of these conversations, this thing, you know, with perhaps an agenda in mind or some questions that you want some answers to. And my guess is that you're not getting many answers to many of the questions that you have. I might first consider what kind of a conversation, if you were, as a son, what kind of a conversation would you want to have with your dad? And, you know, maybe being able to, I don't think that being indirect is necessarily the best way to go about it, but being able to directly speak to, you know, what might be below the surface? What kind of needs are being met by alcohol, drugs, nicotine, hiding it from us? And how can we foster a relationship which is open, which, you know, let him know and, you know, please know that I love you unconditionally, whether you're healthy or unhealthy. And, you know, consider what his agenda might be, having a conversation with his father. And, you know, I'm certain that things have changed as, you know, going off to college seems to be a theme of people that have, you know, called in today. You go off to a child goes off to college, comes back, and they're a very different person. You know, what kind of expectations do we have of them? What kind of freedom from them do we offer or express while still having an adult relationship with your son, who you've, you know, of course, guided and mentored and fathered along the way throughout his life?
Now, how does that strike you, Chris?
Yeah, but
I've always just tried to be that mentor from him, and I kind of feel like maybe I let him down, or maybe I wasn't hard enough on maybe, because I never maybe had that talk with him about, you know, you're going to college and like that stuff does come up, and, you know, maybe trying to avoid those kind of things. And then like maybe that was on my part that I didn't like have those conversations. I know we were always going to mass, and like he just, before he went, like in like high school, he was fine. Like nothing happened. And I guess like when he went, he was experimenting with things. And now I feel like we're extremely distant. And like when a conversation does come up, you know, it's just, it's very hard to have. And, you know, I feel like I'm not saying the right things. And it's now stemming to the point where like he gets really, I still support him. He isn't like financially as well when he comes out, of course, because he doesn't have a job yet. And now with those things, I kind of question myself when I'm supporting him in those kind of ways. You know, are those going to the drugs, you know, alcohol, or is he using that for legitimate things, like, you know, trying to find a job, trying to get his own place, like food and stuff? Like, I don't want to have to like cut him off on things, because I feel like then maybe I'm too greedy as a father if I'm holding back. But like, you know, I really do want to support him in these things. And like, if it's going towards alcohol and drugs when he goes out, like, I don't know what he's doing. And I don't know if the best thing to be cut him off and like, let him go do his own thing. Or like, maybe I should find him help, or I've heard right, well, help before. And like, he gets really defensive.
Okay. Scott,
it's a lot there. Thanks for sharing all that, Chris. Three things that I might suggest going into any conversation with him would be humility, openness, honesty. Humility being the most important. And I think that even just as you shared very humbly in regards to the tactics or the approaches that you did or did not take with him in the past, I think that being honest and open and humble with him in that area would be a really great starting point. You know, being able to see someone that your son seeing his father show that kind of humility and care. Of course, the care and love that you can provide as a father that no one else may be able to. Recognizing with him that, you know, I don't have all the answers, but I really want to see you well. I love you. And therefore, I may also do some, you know, have to take on some new approaches towards loving you. And as we spoke with other callers today, that might include setting some expectations and some limits and some boundaries, especially living within this home, or the support that I give you, whether that be financial support or other things that are beyond emotional or loving support, will come with, you know, certain boundaries. I can't support you if you are, you know, if you're not looking to support yourself. These are, of course, conversations that are to be specifically addressed with the individual, and hopefully getting the rest of the family on board as well, while still, you know, making the most of this time that you have with your son in order to enjoy the time that you have together. You know, this is a very, young adulthood is a very challenging age. It's a very, I think, a really fun, exciting age. Whether, you know, all young adults are going through challenges. Being able to walk through with your son or daughter what they're going through, whether that be triumph or tragedy, being able to do that alongside each other can provide a really beautiful relationship, family relationship.
Okay, Chris.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much. I just had one question. When you brought up humility, would that be coming from like my personal humiliation of like having this issue, or like kind of saying how it kind of stems off from him of being like, what he's doing is obviously like dramatic, and like it's something he shouldn't be doing. It's kind of like humiliating for him.
Yeah, I think, you know, self-disclosure as a parent is something that can be done with, I don't know, some thought going into it. How much of my own past and mistakes do I want to disclose to my child? Often that can be very helpful and healing, just to see each other as, or for him to see you as someone who can be trusted in some ways. But I would also say humility and just saying, you know, I may have let you down in the past and not having had this conversation, and that's on me, and I'm going to take ownership of that. That's the humility that I would probably start with.
Chris, thank you very, very much for the call. Scott Wieman is our guest. His book is The 12 Steps and the Sacraments, A Catholic Journey Through Recovery. It's got a cover blurb right on the front from our bishop, Bishop Robert McElroy. Yeah, you think you're a big deal. I can tell. When I say that, you look like you think you're a big deal. There's a deal on it right now. If you go to AveMariaPress.com, you're getting free shipping and 20% off on the book today. And you just put in a promo code 12 steps.
That's right.
Put in the promo code 12 steps and you get the book 20% off and free shipping from AveMariaPress.com. The organization that Scott founded is called Catholic in Recovery. If you want to know more about it, if you'd maybe like to consider opening a chapter in your parish or in your area, just go to CatholicInRecovery.com, CatholicInRecovery.com. And then what is it? Is it a replacement for an AA meeting? Is it a replacement for a Narcotics Anonymous meeting? What is this Catholic in Recovery thing?
No, I'm glad you asked. Okay. Not a replacement for whatever you might be doing to find recovery. There are a variety of ways that can that happens.
Yeah.
12 steps is one of them. Other groups exist, but in addition to one's personal recovery. It can also be a bridge into those recovery groups. But in a Catholic in Recovery meeting, we have people with a variety of different types of addiction in a variety of different places spiritually, some who are coming back to the church, maybe mm-hmm. have been in recovery for some time, but looking to find a deeper relationship with their higher power, Jesus Christ.
Okay.
And then in other ways can be a springboard for people to find recovery groups, whatever it may be, is not so bad that that's not like a death life sentence. I thought for myself, you know, when I would be sentenced to some kind of a recovery group, that was just the end of fun and or freedom as I knew it.
Yeah.
Turns out that that was the opposite.
Scott Wieman has been our guest. You can find out all about his wonderful nonprofit, Catholic in Recovery, just by going to CatholicInRecovery.com. And again, the book, 12 Steps and the Sacraments, is 20% off with free shipping at Ave Maria Press right now. Just put in the promo code 12 Steps. Scott, really, seriously, we got to do this more often.
Love to.
It's wonderful to have you on, and this is one of the most pressing issues of our era, isn't it?
I think so.
All right. Do we have to pay mileage to get you to come over here? Or
no.
Okay, you'll just come? Okay.
Pro bono.
That's good. Next hour, Carlo Broussard will be here to give you the biblical roots of the Marian dogmas. If you're a friend of Mary, this is an hour for you. And if you're not so sure about this Mary character and what Catholics say about her, it's also for you. Join us next for the biblical roots of the Marian doctrines with Carlo Broussard right after this.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.